So our sermon this morning is going to start our new series for the fall, which is called Embrace a Little Crazy. And we're doing this series largely because we know that we are in an exciting time of worship season for our church. As we had Go Sunday last week, a number of ministries are able to be coming back for the fall, as we annually and traditionally do. But also that, to some degree, some of the things that we'll be doing we haven't been able to do in a while because of the impacts of COVID. We know that that's still here, but we've been able to find different ways under, you know, guidance of what we've learned for how we can do those things in hopefully a safe and enjoyable and responsible way. So we'll be continuing to try to do that as much as possible. So that's exciting. We're also in an important season for our church and its sustainability and vision overall. And we saw last week in a sermon that I gave where we talked about the experience of the exiles who had been conquered by Babylon and taken away from their home in Jerusalem in the Old Testament. And in the book of Nehemiah, we see that 70 years later, their descendants are able to return to Jerusalem and start to rebuild the city and the temple. And that was a big transition time for them. And they were able to see God's guidance for building on their foundation in important ways. But they also had that sense of maybe embracing some ideas that were not necessarily automatically in their realm of familiarity right away. They were embracing the idea that God could have been with us even if we're not in the temple, and even if we're not in our city. And so what new things will we understand about the temple and God's presence with us because we experienced 70 years where the temple wasn't necessary for God's presence? We are thankful to have it back, but maybe we get some new meanings out of what our connection to God with can be. And also that a country that they had thought of as an oppressor helped them go back and helped them rebuild the temple. And so who it was that could be included in God's plans is expanding their mind as well. Then we also saw a story of the disciples very soon after Jesus ascended to heaven. And so they were starting ministry for the first time. And they were also building on the foundation of Jesus' ministry and doing some of the same types of things that he had been doing. But they were also embracing the idea that, you know, for a lot of the time that we were with Jesus, we were primarily learning. And a lot of the times Jesus was telling us that we didn't quite get it or we were messing up. Peter was saying that, you know, he was going to betray Jesus. And John and James, who are in this story as well, were arguing about who was going to be the greatest, and Jesus chastised them for that. And so opening themselves up to the possibility that, wow, God can use me who maybe I thought of as a misfit sometimes, who I didn't always think could have the same capacity as Jesus. God is going to come and be with me and help me do even some of the same things that Jesus did while he was physically here, that we're not alone, that the mission can continue, and that sort of expanding things. And so those same ideas is what we're going to continue to explore throughout this series, this idea of we can embrace a little bit of crazy, not explain God away, and see what God will open up for us. So as we move into that series, I was reminded about some of the dynamics of what this can be, a clash of two visions of the world, especially last weekend. And I'm sure many of you join me in marking the 20th anniversary of 9/11 and the attacks on the Twin Towers and the Pentagon and another plane that was, I believe, going to try to crash into the White House, if I remember, but the passengers helped bring it down in Pennsylvania before that could happen. And there were lots of remembrances about that 20th anniversary. And I remember exactly where I was when the attacks happened. I was in college at the time, and I didn't have class until the afternoon of that day. So I was sleeping in, and then one of my roommate's girlfriends kind of started rapping on the door and burst into the room and said that she had been told to leave class, that there was an attack in New York, and that we should all wake up and turn on the TV and find out what was going on. And I'm sure many of you remember your own versions of this, being told something really horrible had happened, turn on the TV, see what was going on, and then you start to process it the same way that we did. Everything was almost in slow motion, depending on when you came in. You didn't know if it was just sort of a horrible accident, or then when the second plane crashed and heard that there were some other planes that the FAA had lost contact with, that maybe this was more coordinated and that something really tragic and horrible and that might have a lot of greater meaning long-term for our lives was happening. And you're sitting there trying to figure out, what do I say to the people who are here with me? How do I understand what's going on? And you just would kind of stare at the TV, mouth agape, wondering, mind racing, but not really having much to say of what would come next. And I remember that one of the things in particular that a lot of people talked about that day, because there wasn't much other way to make sense of it, or even as people were talking about it afterwards, because we were able to see a lot of it on TV, that there were live feeds, even to see the second plane in particular crash into the other Twin Tower. And so we could watch the whole thing as we were going, which is one of the first events in our culture that was happened that way. And the way a lot of people processed it was to say, this feels like a movie. It's like I'm watching something that someone put together, you know, like all the Avengers movies have all the buildings blow up and everything's going crazy. And that's the best way that we had to make sense of what we were seeing, even though that it wasn't that. We didn't know what else to say or how else to understand it. And some of you may know this, I've talked about it before. In college, one of the things I studied in particular was media and cultural theory. And so we ended up talking a lot about this in college and seminary, that idea of us processing something that happened in the real world by saying it was like something that happened in media or in a movie, and that was the best way we had to take our understanding of the world, that we took the real world and said the only way we can understand it is through our experience of a fake world. And really, that's kind of an odd thing. I think most of the time we think about, you know, the way that we make our stories in media, in the fake and the virtual world, is that we have experiences in the real world, in the actual world, and then we use that to inspire us, and maybe we use our imagination and expand them a little bit, but that the direction goes, experiences in the real world go through a filter, create stories in the media and in a fictional world. But in this case, we were going in the opposite direction. And that's a really strange thing to say, I understand a fictional world better, and that becomes my filter for understanding the real world. And those clashes of the way the world works, I think, created some of the trauma that we experience. And that's also something that a lot of people worried about a lot. Like, how is that a healthy, wise, useful way to understand what happens to us in the real world, is to filter it through something that is not real? And that's a danger that a lot of people worry about for other reasons as well. That if we see a depiction of reality, will that warp our experience of actual reality in a way that it shouldn't? And so it might be in particular that if we use a story that's crafted by somebody for a very particular way, and that becomes the way that we understand reality, our understanding of reality might be overly and wrongly shaped by what the person who created the fake world a very particular way, maybe intentionally they wanted to change our perception of reality, or unintentionally because they didn't think it would help us understand the real world, that the story was meant to have one meaning and it takes on a whole different meaning when we use it to understand the real world. And an example of this that you might be more familiar with, and why people worry if this could control our decisions or make us not understand the real world in the best way, is when people talk about things like, say, violent video games. If kids get too immersed in shooting up a bunch in a violent video game, then when they encounter different problems in the real world, a lot of people have worried, will that make them more inclined to be violent? For the most part, thankfully, there are studies that show that that's not the case, but that we can imagine that there's probably some type of impact that even in a fictional world, it clashes and can come into the real world in a way that people can be concerned about. A less serious version that you could think about for how this might work and why this would be important is, imagine that there is a really trendy, hip young woman who's going to go to a farm for the first time. It's fall. It's a great time for fall festivals. Maybe she's excited about that. But she's never gone, so she doesn't know what to do. And so she searches on the internet, maybe in her Instagram feed or on Twitter, like, what should a woman like me wear to go to the farm? And how is she going to have a good experience? And probably the things that will actually pop up are less practical in those settings and more like, you know, models trying to look like they're having a great time and selling fall clothes, the trendy flannel shirts and cool hats and UGG boots and designer jeans and whatever else. And so her perception of what it's going to look like to go to the farm is going to be shaped potentially in one particular way because of her experience. And so then when she gets to the real farm, and if she says, well, that looks like what everybody's doing, I'm going to do that too, then she's going to have quite a sobering reality if it's actually a working farm. And so she's going out there and like, ooh, I'm going to meet some horses, and now I'm walking around in some poop, and it's all dirty, and I'm not very comfortable the way that I thought I would be. And so she's actually setting herself up for failure, and that would not be good at all. And so that's an extreme and kind of goofy example, but those are the types of things that people wonder about when we have that clash of not real world, fictional world, virtual world, and is that actually useful for our real world example? And our scriptures today, I brought all this up because they actually represent a similar type of clash of worlds. The way that people think that the world could be, maybe there's not TV obviously in these times, but the idea of what the world could be and then the world as people had experienced it up to that point. And so all these people are trying to figure out the same way. How do I filter my actual experience through this idea of the way the world could be and what my actual experience up to this point of the real world has been? And so in this case, people are asking the questions, is the world a place where only certain types of things can physically happen? Only people of certain ages or circumstances can get pregnant? Or is the world a place where those usual imitations are not the final word? Sarah's faced with that clash as people tell her, even though you're old, you're going to get pregnant. Similarly, for Jesus and his family in particular, they're facing the clash of, is the world a place where powerful people can be challenged? So that some people who have otherwise been forgotten or left out, like the man with the shriveled hand that Jesus healed, that they're actually able to thrive, even though that threatens people in power? Or is it a place where really the best thing that you can hope for is only making things a tiny bit better, maybe giving that person a little bit of money for the day or something, because otherwise you're going to make powerful people so upset that they'll hurt you and anyone else in their way. And that's a big part of what Jesus' family was concerned about. They knew that there were powerful people that were eyeing Jesus very suspiciously with each new thing that he got attention about. So in both stories, right, our impulse naturally is going to be to affirm the world that is beyond what is the conception of most of the people in the story. We have the benefit of coming to the stories and being a part of faith after we know the full story. And so we want to tell Sarah, of course you should believe God. God's going to give you this miracle baby. That's amazing. Don't laugh. Don't doubt. That this is the promise that you and Abraham were waiting for, that God's going to bring a great nation that will bless all people. Have that faith. Similarly, we want to tell Jesus' family, yeah, it's early in Jesus' ministry, they didn't know exactly where everything was going to go, but you shouldn't be trying to hold Jesus back. Mary, you were a virgin mom. The idea of a miracle shouldn't be throwing you off that much. But we imagine that she had that protective mother feeling, and so she was still making sense of what was this really going to mean. We want to say, but Jesus has important ministry to help people. He's going to challenge the ways that power is being misused in your country. He's the savior of the world, so why are you acting like he's out of his mind and he just needs to be reasoned with and be kind of brought back into more normal behavior? You're going to stunt the amazing things that can actually happen. And the thing is, there's really good reasons for why we take that posture, why we encourage that faithfulness. Because depictions of reality inspiring our understanding of actual reality don't have to just be negative or limiting, like I talked about with violent video games or the woman who goes and gets her UGG boots all completely messed up and is really uncomfortable at a farm. Because sometimes things that help us conceive of and make sense of and begin to dream about the idea that another world is possible is actually a great way to have hope and imagination. It's not always about manipulating things in a negative way. It can be about potentially, if it's used well, inspiring things in a really amazing, positive way that if we didn't have that inspiration, maybe we wouldn't do some amazing things that we actually would have the ability to do if we could get past our doubt or our worry and into that imagination and hope. And I think part of the way that we tap into that hope Part of the way we tap into that imagination and positivity that's possible from stretching our understanding of actual reality with inspiration from another type of reality is trying to figure out what we do when a different version of the world is presented to us, like what happens in these stories. Right? We have to be honest about why it is that we have those clashes of the way that someone tells us the world could be and the way that we're used to understanding the world. Why is it that we have feelings like Sarah? Why is it that we have feelings like Mary and Jesus' siblings? We can't just say, oh, we'll automatically always be inspired because I'm a person of faith. I'll never have feelings like Sarah and Mary. It's okay for us to be honest about those real experiences and then have God help us through them the way that Jesus and God ultimately helped Abraham and Sarah and Jesus' family and Jesus' followers. It's easy for us to get stuck into thinking that this is ridiculous, but we want to see something that God is inviting us to, even if it seems crazy. And I'd like to think that, you know, I could respond like a good Sunday school student, and every time something comes up, I'll be the one who's right there up front saying, yay, Jesus, I'm going to believe in whatever is going on. But we can all be like Sarah. We can all be like Abraham. We can all be like the religious authorities at Jesus' time. We can all be like Jesus' family. But I want to operate more like the faithful person that God's amazing new world beyond what I'm used to is possible, and that I want to help be a part of that, help make that happen in following God. But I'm going to have to deal with the things that make it hard. I'm going to have to be honest about why my feelings might start to get in the way and have God help me deal with them. So what are some of the things that we see in these stories that are those responses when we see that potentially another world is possible, but it's not easy for us to jump into faithfulness right away and hope right away? Let's look at Sarah in particular, right? She had both disbelief and frustration, right? Sarah was sort of like, there's no way, it's not physically possible for someone my age to get pregnant. This is just silly. But I also think that the way that she talked showed some frustration of, you know, God, it's great that you're doing this, but a few chapters in Genesis ago, you told us about how Abraham was going to bring about this whole nation because of your blessing. We've been trying to follow along with that. You may have noticed that I let Abraham have a kid with our servant Hagar, and we have Ishmael now. And so we've been doing our best to make our family work in probably not a very fun way for me. And now you tell me, after we've already done that, after I've gone through all that emotional turmoil, that now I'm going to be the one to have the baby? And so I think we can have those same feelings of both either there's no way that this could actually happen, and it just seems silly, and it's hard for us to step out in faith and hope when something seems beyond us. But also, God, I've already got all this other stuff going on, and it's important. And I thought that even some of it was like my best effort to do what I think you care about. And now you're shifting gears on me. Now you're asking me to take a left turn. Is there no consideration of what my feelings have been? And that's okay to honestly have those feelings. And it may be that God is going to help us make sense of the stuff that was already there for us, that we're now frustrated, that it's maybe going to have to take on a different role and a different meaning in our lives. And God can also help us with our unbelief. But what that takes is to say, I'm going to open myself up to trust. And not just trust in this blind way of like, the Bible says that God can do these amazing things, so this might be possible in my life, I'm just going to say that I'm okay with it. It's about opening up to trust to expose what our real feelings are and all the things that we're dealing with. And God will help us go all the way through them and get to the place where we can be full of hope and imagination and whatever the new world that's possible that God has for us. Because if we go through them, if we allow God to help us deal with them, then we'll be ready to move forward in whatever God is offering. If we just try to jump ahead and pretend that they're not there, those become more like baggage, more like things holding us back because they're undealt with from living fully in what God has. And that's part of the reason, I think, why Jesus was encouraging his mother and siblings to like rethink what all of our relationships together will be. It's still important that we are a family. Jesus still included them. Jesus' siblings were a big part of the early church. Mary, by the end of the Gospels, is supporting all of the disciples as they mourn Jesus' loss initially at the crucifixion. But it was about, we have to be on the same page. And so, if you got stuff to deal with, let's deal with it, but then we can move forward on the same page. Abraham actually also has an interesting and understandable response to the visitor showing up and saying things. It doesn't seem like he has much of a response because there's not very much described to him other than like, hey, let me, you know, come get you some water and some food and stuff. But that in itself is actually its own response. We can picture that as they were talking to Sarah and she was laughing and doubting, that he was just kind of standing there like, I'm just going to stay out of it. I'm going to be neutral. We'll see in a year or so, like if that's what it turns out. I'm not going to go on record one way or the other. I'm not going to put myself out there and maybe be disappointed, but I'm definitely not going to get lumped in with Sarah and have you guys say that I'm a doubter too. And that's its own thing. Sometimes we want to kind of wait things out. We want to be neutral. We want to say, I'm not going to go on record as being a doubter, but I kind of want to wait things out and see. And discernment is important, but we can be encouraged from Abraham, like, I'm going to try to step up. And maybe there are things that seem sort of outside my familiarity, outside what seems to be the realm of possibility. I'm going to risk potentially looking a little bit foolish. I will put myself out there and say that this is something worth believing in. This is something worth hoping in. So even if it carries some risk, I'm going to show that that is valuable. And so I'm going to put myself out there to be a part of it. And even if it doesn't work out, I put myself on the side of something that was really wonderful and beautiful. And we may not really want to go on the side of the religious officials in the story in Mark, but we can be that way too. Sometimes our world is being challenged the same way that the Pharisees and the Herodians and those that said, we've kind of got the system set up pretty good for us. Jesus is coming in and messing things up a little bit and making people question if our way is the best way. And maybe we're not as specifically negative and attacking against things that come along and say another world is possible, but we can still say, to be honest, sometimes the world I have right now is actually going okay. And it's hard for me to think of, even if it sounds in general pretty good, the world I know and is going along pretty good can sometimes be better than the world I don't know, and maybe it seems good, but what if it turns out not working out as well as the promise seems to be? So then I let go of something that was really good. And so we might not pursue something that's positive because we think that we're already in a good position. And especially when that's about our own interests and potentially harming the interests of other people that could be a part of something new that not only helps us but helps more people than are currently helped by what we're used to, then we're really potentially getting in the way of God's plans. We want to be about more than just about what works out best for us. And so in those moments, we want to come to God the same way we talked about with Sarah and just be honest, go through it, deal with it. God, I need help letting go of this thing. This has been a really good part of my life. Maybe one of the things you're telling me is that it's been good for you, but because it's hurt other people, we really need to let go of it, even if it's hard. Or maybe it's been, you're right, that's been a really good part of your life for a season, but I've got a new season for you. And so try to hold that experience loosely and let God continue to bring you into the thing that's best for you in each new season. And again, trust that God is also doing the thing that's not just best for you, but best for all the people in your life and the people that you'll come in contact with. And that's an exciting thing to be a part of, that not just am I doing well, but am I in a community that's doing well. And that's a really wonderful thing to be a part of. And then lastly, again, we can relate to Jesus' family. We've probably all had, you know, somebody in our family that's like, I got this great new business idea. I'm going to go on this new crazy adventure. And we kind of look at them and say, I don't know if that's the best thing. I don't know if I can get on board with that. And we don't know exactly what to do. And maybe even we feel protective of them. And that's understandable too, that we can see that you're doing something that's risky. God or person in my life who says that they're following God and is inviting me to come along. I don't want you to get hurt. I don't want bad things to happen to you. And we know that, in fact, bad things did happen to Jesus. And so that protective nature is not a bad thing to have. But this story reminds us that sometimes being overprotective keeps us from experiencing the fullness of life. It's sort of if you had, you know, one corner of a beautiful wood or something that you could go around and explore and play in, but you said, you know, let's just put a fence around this one little area, and we know everything's good there, and we'll never go outside the fence. But there's all this amazing, wonderful thing that could be outside that fence into the rest of the wood and have a wonderful experience, but we limit ourselves from that because we go in a protective way. And what helps us there in particular is that remembering that maybe there are some things that have cost, but if what it is so good that it's worth the cost, we can all think of things in our lives that, yeah, it was hard. Yeah, it stretched me. Yeah, it had times that were painful. But there was so much of it that was so good. These might be relationships in our lives that we've had to go through difficult seasons, but we know that overall we have a wonderful, loving experience. Those people have shaped us. It could be something we've done in our lives where we had to work really hard and it wasn't always easy, but at the end of it, it came out and it now is something that's an amazing achievement or an amazing part of what we do every day in our work or as a hobby or something. And so we have to focus on that good and say, God will help me with the cost if I put my faith and my hope and my imagination in that good and I follow through on it. And so what are the things that can happen if we're willing to go through all those experiences, be honest with God? I have some disbelief. I have some frustration. I have some sense that I might be a little bit threatened because I don't want to let go of something that's already good. I have a little bit of fear or worry or desire to protect around there being some harm or some cost. Or I don't really want to commit one way or the other. Can I just kind of come along for the ride? Those are all understandable, valid feelings, but they're also all feelings that God can help us to get to that other world that God is making around us that's better and that really is possible, even if it doesn't seem like it always is. So another thing that can happen when we go into these things and we're invited to have faith in this world is that it seems like we're only looking at something that's pie in the sky. And so it doesn't take into account the real struggles. If I believe in this, I have to pretend that it's not difficult. And then I can move forward. But God really does want to take us all the way through. And we want to be invested in that. So we don't have to view life through fake rose-colored glasses. We can embrace the crazy and see how it really will yield real fruit. And even when things aren't easy. In fact, the fruit might come from struggling together with God and being formed together by things that are difficult, but seeing how we can get through them and achieve something better. One of my favorite shows that I've been watching lately is one on Netflix called Atypical. It's about a young man who has autism, and he's decently high functioning on the autism spectrum, but there's still a lot of things that are really challenging for him. And the show follows him and his family trying to support him as he goes through trying to figure out how to grow up. He's initially a senior in high school and then goes into college over the course of the seasons of the show. And he wants to stretch himself. He wants to see how, even if he manages his limitations, what can he still be possible to do? And ultimately, the buildup of that show is that one of his biggest interests is penguins and Antarctica. And so he stretches himself over the course of the show. He learns how to have a girlfriend. He learns how to drive a car. He has a job. He does a lot of things that, you know, kind of improve his social skills and everything. And so ultimately, he says, I want to go to Antarctica. I want to study scientifically penguins and other animals down there that I love. And everyone around him says, that is crazy. There's no way. You're too sensitive to cold and to light, and whether it's too light or too dark. You get too stressed out when things are difficult. There's no way that you could have this capacity. But he has that dream, and he wants to continue to pursue it. And at first, he does pursue it in a way that's too pie in the sky. But holding on to that thing that is a better version of what the world could be like for him means that he pushes through. And people who see that that is worthwhile to him begin to find ways to come alongside him and to support it in a way that makes it more realistic and not just a ridiculous idea that's going to fail. They help him plan, and that in itself becomes a good thing for transforming him and improving him, is being the type of person who does all the things to get ready for something really, really hard, and stretching himself and pushing himself and knowing that he has a support network to help him do that. So all of those things, even before he even gets to Antarctica and is still wondering whether or not it's even going to happen, just the process of believing in that other world is possible and doing all the things necessary for it become incredibly transformative for his life and for his relationships. And also, because he's doing that, it transforms the people around him. There are people who are willing to stretch themselves also because they're inspired by him. They're willing to be more honest about things that they were doing that were holding them back before. But because they realize Sam is willing to be honest, that's the name of the boy who's going to Antarctica, Sam's willing to be honest about his struggles and deal with them. So maybe I need to do that too. And so his mom, who is over-controlling and protective, lets go of that and learns how to be how to have supportive, loving relationships rather than controlling, loving relationships and be more secure in herself because of that. His dad had struggled with the idea of the only way that I can connect with my son is if he gets me. But he learns to be more selfless and say, I want to share this with my son. I've never been interested in Antarctica before, but my son is so important to me. I'm going to take vacation that I've never taken. I've never found a thing that was worthwhile doing. I'm driving myself to panic attacks in the show. I'm going to do something healthy for myself, and I'm going to make the effort to connect with my son and not just rely on whether or not it's easy. And his sister was struggling with her own anxiety and her success being defined by other people's pressure on her. And when she sees that Sam decides to define success for himself, she finds the freedom to do that as well. And so she lets go of the pressures that other people were putting on her and that were making her be unhealthy. And she makes a choice that might have seemed like a step down for some people, but was still pursuing her dreams, but in a way that was much healthier for her, because she was now defining success for herself and not by the pressures that someone else was putting on her. And so this whole thing, through lots of ups and downs, Sam thinking, I can go to Antarctica, but not being realistic about it, him going through the process of doing everything that was necessary to do it in a healthy way, him bringing people around him and their mutual relationships, creating impact for each other, created this amazing new thing, even at the point where at first, before the show ended, his trip was canceled for forces out of his control. But they all saw the amazing benefits that happened. Now, he did end up going to Antarctica, and so we saw that the other world was possible. But what I think we can take hope from that story even more than, yes, when it happens, and we believe that God is faithful to help another world be possible when it happens, but that maybe even when it takes a long time to happen, or it doesn't happen in the way that we thought and we were most excited about at the time, that pursuing that in true, faithful ways, in ways that offer up our feelings that become barriers and ask God to help us deal with them, that even if we don't get all the way there, if it takes us a long time to get all the way there, that the other world that was made possible by trying to get to the ultimate dream is also that much better for us. And that's an amazing thing that God can do in our lives as well. And so taking hope in that, having faith in that, that's a great thing for our church to have in this season. And I believe that we're going to continue to find amazing things building on our foundation and seeing that God has more things for us in coming weeks, in coming months, in coming years, maybe even in ways that another thing is possible and that God will show us what that is. But even if it takes a number of years to see exactly what that is and have God bring us fully from all the seasons that God has been faithful to us in the past and all the way into the new season, that going through the season, even when it's hard, even when it seems like it's taking a long time, even when we're trying to make sense of it and sometimes feel uncomfortable, that believing God is going to be doing that for us, embracing a little bit of the crazy, offering our feelings that are difficult, God's going to do an amazing thing in our community. And we're going to have amazing real fruit inspired by the other world that's possible, even as we go through the difficulties. And I hope that we can all take hope in that and go into a thing where we're embracing a little bit of crazy together.